Yeah, good to talk. Sorry about the delay. And it's good to be back. Bezos Hashem should come along with Maseiros Tovis. Hashem. The year 1948 is a very significant year in history of the Jews and the history of the world. Does the year 1948 raise associations in anybody's mind?
Yeah.
That's the year of Rome.
Yeah.
That's the year Avraham Avinu was born. And that is the very great significance of the year 1948.
Except it was this
I
big going share. You
didn't
weren't
put
born
I
just
wasn't
then.
there. 1948, Avraham Avinu appears on the scene, and basically the world reached its purpose. In Nobody here is surprised if I'll say that I grew up in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Avigdor Miller. You hear me quote him three or four times every shiur. That's really the Beis Medrash of Slabodka. And the shining star in that Beis Medrash is Avraham Avinu. The sugya of Avraham Avinu is an inexhaustible subject in it's an inexhaustible subject. And let's try to scratch at the surface a little bit to see what, as like the Ramchal says, that it's a good idea, it's worthwhile for us to say, what was it that our forefathers did that made Hashem so cherish them? It's a good idea for us to study that because Avraham Avinu basically had one primary wish. And that one primary wish was that all of his accomplishments, which we'll discuss a bit, shouldn't die with him, and he didn't rely on that it would continue through his disciples. He already saw from experience in his own life that if he really wants perpetuation, eternal perpetuation of the values that he brought into this world, of the knowledge of Hashem that he brought into this world, it has to be by him continuing to live in through his own seed. And that's why his foremost desire was that we should be here, that he should have seed, that he should have progeny, that there should be a continuation to all of the earth-shattering things that he introduced and accomplished.
Question. So, how do you have any guarantee that your kids are going to follow you any better than your disciples?
We don't have any
You have any
guarantees.
guarantee?
There are no
Okay.
guarantees. Every person has their own bechira. In his case, this is what he came to realize. Okay. So let's back up a little bit. Let's back up a little bit. Let's back up all the way back to the first pasuk in the Torah. The first pasuk in the Torah says, Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim v'sa'aretz. Hashem created heaven and earth. Now, bear with me a little bit. I want to go a little bit deep, dive a little bit deep until we surface again and find ourselves back on solid ground. But if you look at that pasuk, there seems to be something of an imbalance there, because the heavens and earth aren't, it's not two sides of a coin. Earth is a tiny speck in the immensity of heavens. I'm just talking Gashmias now, I'm not talking Ruchnias. So heavens and earth, it's kind of like saying, well, Hashem created Europe and a tomato. It's even more than that, much, much, much. The contrast is much bigger, right? So there's already a certain imbalance in the first pasuk. But then move on to the second pasuk, and the imbalance just mushrooms. Because we say Hashem created heavens and earth. And earth was, we zoom in on earth, right? And we forget about the heavens. The heavens just move back into the background. We come back, we touch on it again a little bit, right? But what's going on? The answer is simple, and then we should follow the continuation of the pattern. What is the Torah there to describe to us? What is the Torah there to tell us? What is the Torah in terms of, say, for Bereishis? In Shemais, we start getting direct instruction. Right? Bereishis doesn't have direct instruction. It's not the story of the creation. It includes that, but that's not the essence. It's also not the story of the Jewish people. It includes that too, but that's not the essence of it. The essence of it is that Hashem is giving his perspective on existence. We are tapping into, being clued into Kiviyachol. That's what the essence of Torah is. That's why Torah is such so important. That's why learning Torah is such an important mitzvah. It is tuning into Kiviyachol Hashem's view, Hashem's perspective, Hashem's reality, Hashem's Kiviyachol, his thinking processes. And therefore, if you see, we all know that the Torah is there to teach you right and wrong, but it goes much further than that. The Torah is there also to teach you important versus unimportant, where to put your focus, where to invest energies by following your way the Torah puts its focus and where the Torah is kiviyachol putting energies. So if immediately at the beginning of the Torah says, well, there's heavens, but forget about that, let's focus on earth, what you're being told is this is where Hashem's focus is. Hashem's focus is on that tiny little speck of existence relative to the galaxies, which is earth. And that's why the Torah is immediately zooming in on earth. That's where Hashem's interests lie, and as expressed in the Torah. Now, let's follow the process a little bit more. Okay, the first day, light and dark are created. And we also told, incidentally, that there was also an earth and there's also water. The Torah doesn't tell you that Hashem created the water. It just kind of like appears incidentally. Moving to the next day is the creation of the atmosphere. Right? That's the creation of the atmosphere. That can fill volumes, right? But the Torah is very sparing on words. It moves quickly, right? And then you go from there to the geological structure of Earth, right? I think they call it the topography. I'm not sure what the words, right? About how all the seas came together. And this is also, we're talking about volumes and volumes, but the Torah moves through it quickly. The atmosphere, geology, topography, then all of plant life and the celestial bodies, right? The sun and the moon. Quick, quick, quick. The Torah moves through it quickly. You've got volumes and volumes and volumes. But the Torah moves very quickly. The Torah doesn't have extra words for these things. All right? And then we move into animal life. Again, endless, infinite. Starts with the fish, the birds, the animal. Quick, quick, quick. The Rosh Hashanah is rushing through. Okay, we made animals. Moving on, moving on, moving on. You want to know more about that? Open the endless volumes of the sciences. And then the Torah slows down. Where does the Torah slow down? Before the creation of man, all of a sudden, there's almost a full stop. There's a whole hakdamah. There's a whole introduction. There's a whole introduction, and it's being framed, etc. Okay, and then from that moment on, again, the same pattern as in the beginning. All the amazing phenomena we just heard about, again, you see it into the background. There's a galaxy. There's plant life, animal life, there's a whole earth, etc. That's all moving into the background. And right now, the Torah again zooms in, and it's all about man, which is bringing out the same point again. In that immense galaxy that Hashem created, his interest is on that tiny speck called Earth. And on Earth, that once you zoom in on Earth, you see that it's actually pretty big. He's zooming in again. My interest is on man. What happens further? Continue. Further in the Torah, you see the same pattern again. Man starts to multiply. Mabul, okay, after the Mabul, there's a rebirth. Man is multiplying, filling the earth. And all of a sudden, a certain individual appears on the scene. And what happens now? The Torah again zooms in. Once Avraham Avinu appears on the scene, the Torah zooms in for, well, right now we're talking in broad terms, but the Torah zooms in for the third time. And now, it's all about Avraham Avinu and all the rest of mankind, right? If they're zooming in on Earth and moving the galaxy to the background, then we zoomed in on man and moved the rest of Earth to the background. Avraham Avinu appears on the scene, and now the Torah zooms in on Avraham Avinu, and all the rest of mankind recedes to the background. They were great people. They were great people. There was shame, there was aver. But now all we know about them is they're in the context of Avraham Avinu, right? Once Avraham Avinu appears on the scene, where do we hear about shame again? He shows up as a very great leader. And he shows up as Malki Tzedek in the context of his encounter with Avraham Avinu. The way Abba Avigdor Miller put it is that there are great stars, but once the sun comes up, you stop seeing the stars. Right? You stop noticing them. They pale, they lose their light in comparison. And that's what happened when Avraham Avinu appeared on the scene. Avraham Avinu appeared on the scene, and he now became the focus of the entire Bria. This is what Hashem was waiting for. This is what he was envisioning. Now, again, there were great people, and those great people are sitting forever in Gan Eden, Mahalalel, and there was Mesu Shelach, there was Shem, there was Aver, and there was Noach. Sorry? I said, Noach, that's true, but in Noach's case, it was more because all of the rest of mankind was wiped out. So if you're talking about Earth, you're only talking about Noach. He was mankind. Avraham Avinu, there was a whole world full of mankind, right? But he becomes the sole focus. He, in essence, it's mind-boggling when you think of it this way, but he came into a world which had, I don't know what the numbers were. Let's call it millions. I don't know exactly what the numbers were at that point. And he captured Hashem's exclusive attention. And he becomes this Hashem's story of his world is the story of Avraham Avinu and going forward, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Hashem's people. And once again, when we get to Parsha Shmos and the story of the Torah becomes the story of Am Yisrael, it's once again because that's Hashem's story of the world. So again, we're talking about very great people here. And here I see we have a question here. What about the fact that Yaakov went to learn by Shem for 14 years? We aren't downplaying the greatness of Shem at all. But we're saying that, yes, Shem was perpetuating a glorious and magnificent legacy. Shem was the one who was continuing to carry the knowledge of truth throughout the times when it was forgotten. And yet, Avraham Avinu outshone him. So let's take a step back and try to follow according to our level. We're talking about Avraham Avinu, we're talking about things that are way beyond our comprehension. But yet, the story of Avraham Avinu is there for us to learn from, and it'll be everybody getting from it what they can get according to their levels. So let's try to follow his process a little bit. Okay. So the first thing we know about Avraham Avinu is, in terms of the process that he followed, was that he was a thinker. Start with that. Now let's bring this out as follows. We'll bring this out as follows. Might have given this mashal a few times here, I don't remember. But imagine if you open your door one morning, you step out of your apartment. Right on the floor in front of the door is a big paper package, wrapped package. Today they're not paper anymore, right? It's a plastic bag, okay? But a big wrapped package. It says your name on it. That's all it says. Doesn't say return address, no name of the sender, just has your name on it. You pick up the package, you take it into the house, you have no idea what this is about. You open up the package, and it's full of cash. Full of cash, bundles and bundles of hundreds, and it's $10 million cash. Nice sum. But let me ask you, in very realistic terms, what would you feel? The superficial response is, I'd be thrilled. But the truth is that if you really think about it in realistic terms, we'd all be feeling something different. What would you be feeling? You'd be nervous. What's going on?
sure that somebody left it there.
What's
Maybe it was
happened?
stolen money. How did it appear here? Now, if I won the lottery, it would be different.
That's right. If you win the lottery, it's different. But here we're talking about something that appeared that you don't know where it came from, why it's there. So the thought will go through your mind, if this is really for me, that's great. But what's actually happening? And the truth is, you're actually coming from a mature, intelligent place, you actually start getting nervous. Who did I get tangled with? Whose is this? What's going on? Am I being framed? Am I getting into trouble with the mafia? What's happening here? What should I do with this? Should I call the police? Will that get me into trouble? Should I call a lawyer? What do I do? Right? But the premise that you're working with is that people don't just drop $10 million at your doorstep for nothing. There's something happening here. Something is happening here. And the fact that I don't know what's going on, am I in danger? Am I about to get in big trouble? What's happening? Or is this really for me? But you're nervous. You're not at ease. So here's how the Chazon Ish lays it down. He says the truly intelligent person coming from a vacuum should go crazy upon the discovery of his body.
Wow.
Of his body.
Oh.
Right? Now, here again, we've learned Chovas HaLevavos. Everybody's been here through Shaar HaBchina, so the concept is not new to you. But let's frame it this way. The Chazon Ish says, and again, he's talking about a person, we all were spoon-fed the understanding behind. But he says a person born into a vacuum, he has a very beautiful poetic description of what that should look like at the beginning of his Sefer Emunah U'Bitachon. The person who doesn't know anything, has no background, but actually discovers his body. Now, again, we know Shaar HaBchina. You don't need to know Shaar HaBchina to know that most people, even if they don't have the information, are not troubled by that. Why? Okay, so we go back to the Chavos, people were born with it, et cetera, et cetera. But if you really picture a person who first discovers it with his full adult abilities, so the Chazon Ish said such a person should be experiencing that. Why? What's this all about? What's the point? What's the purpose? What's expected of me? Who's going to be coming after me? Who did this and why? Right? As we've discussed back in the Chovas HaLevavos, if you think about your different body parts and you think about your different systems, start translating them into money in a very practical kind of way. How much would people pay to save a leg? Right? But if it's a question of saving two legs, is $300,000 over the top? I don't think so. Right? But people would pay that to go through the medical processes. How much would people pay to save their sight? How much would a person with kidney trouble, right, who's going through all the processes of dialysis, et cetera, how much should they be willing to pay to be completely off the hook? Start thinking about all these different things and you say, how much monetary value, we're just thinking in those terms, do you actually have in that package called your body? Think about it in these terms, okay? So, again, if you were born into it never really hit you, you can also buy into theories that are basically it's one big mistake, it happened by accident, it came together over billions of years, and there really is no purpose to it. But you can only buy into that because of the fact that it never really hit you, never really grasped the immensity of it in such a way. You grew up with it, you're used to it, and therefore you can buy into such things. But therefore, the Chazon Ish says that the truly thinking person, the truly intelligent person, he says he should be have no rest because of how perplexed he is as to what was this, what is going on here, why? That was the story of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was the person who was hit by that riddle, by that question. Why? What's this all about? Like we've also said here. People ask why, Kalila, generally, people ask why when something goes awry, right? Oh, why? Am I allowed to ask why? We've also discussed here. Your why is that much more legitimate if you were also asking it when everything was good. If you're asking it about all the good things, I don't understand Hashem's ways. I don't understand this either. People don't have a problem understanding that. If Hashem showers me with the wealth of bracha, why shouldn't he? I deserve it. All of a sudden, if one thing goes a little off, why? But Avraham Avinu was asking why about his fingers and about his digestive system and about his eyes and about everything he saw in the world around him. And he was trying to figure it out. What's going on here? So what? You want to talk to me about idols, about all the different deities? Which basically, again, I don't know exactly how it, what form it took in those days, but basically the concept of these different deities was that it was like a different level of beings with their weaknesses and their, you know, strength and their this one's better at this and that one's better at that, and they're all busy fighting, and it's all each god for himself, and you just try to connect with the god that'll work best for you and hope that he can stand up for you in the whole business. But Avraham said, no, there is an overarching plan and purpose here. All the mightiest forces of nature, when you look at it, you see that they're really all just working in tandem as part of a system. They're all subject to the same system. And he thought, and he thought, and he thought, and he thought, and he reached the conclusion that yes, there is a creator of it all. He reached that conclusion. But the next question was, why did he do it all? He created me. What does he want from me? What is my purpose in his plan? Is it for my good? Is it for my bad? Is he out there for me? Is he against me? Now, we're saying it in very simple terms. What we're talking about, accumulated thought, active, proactive thought over years, right? We have Chazal tell us that he discovered Hashem at the age of 3. And then there are other sources in Chazal telling us that he discovered Hashem at the age of 40. All these different things are said.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, but Avraham must have had some Masorah from these people that went before him. It wasn't such a new thing.
So did he have a tradition? So let's just first finish out this point, then we'll get back to that. When we say that he discovered Hashem at the age of 3 and at the age of 40, there shouldn't be any conflicts, because any of us who have been through the process of growth in our Emunah know that you discover Hashem, and then you discover him, and then you discover him, and then you discover him. And that was Avraham Avinu's process. He was discovering him to one extent, and then that much more real and tangible, that much more of a deeper understanding. And this went on and on. And right, we again, if we've been through the covers of Avos, we know that he expects that to be the story of our life, of constantly reaching a deeper and realer and more tangible sense of Hashem. Now, did he have a Messiah? Not necessarily. See, we'll get confused if we get into all the sources on the subject. But Avraham Avinu, where was the Messiah being perpetuated? In Yerushalayim. This is where Shem Ve'Eved were. Avraham Avinu wasn't born there. He was born in Me'iv HaNa'or. He was born in Mesopotamia. It was a while until he actually got there. Now, what exactly were the processes? What happened when? Again, this will get confusing if we really try to work it out. But not necessarily. It's likely that he was the person who rediscovered it. And if there was the chain of Masorah going like that, that he came from the outside and then reconnected with it, but not just reconnected with it. And this is part of the point that we're making here. Outdid all of the understanding that the Masorah had. And he drew on it, but as we'll discuss, probably not this week anymore, he even, the Bavigdor Miller says this in a very strong fashion. You see that even when he went to settle in Eretz Yisrael, why didn't, this should be a riddle, this should be a mystery, why didn't he settle in Shalem, where Malki Tzedek and his whole community was? It was a whole community of people living his ideals, and he went out to the wilderness in Be'er Sheva. Why didn't he settle in Shalim? Answer, again, right now, maybe we'll elaborate on it more, but in a general way, the answer is that he was actually surpassing them and didn't want to be held back. We'll get to that more. I hope. Bli neder, mitzvah Hashem. I'm just saying that right now, we call al regel achas. But whatever the case is, Avraham Avinu went through that process of, yes, there must be a creator. When he reached, and again, we're saying it's in very broad strokes, but we're trying to touch on a process that was went through years of intense thought and application. After he reached the understanding that there must be a creator, the next stage was, you can follow in Chodesh HaLevavos, it's largely the process of Chodesh HaLevavos, learning to sense him in a personal way, learning to sense him in my life, learning to sense his involvement with me. So it's bringing it from the fact that there must be a creator to this whole system to, wow, I'm starting to sense him all around me in my life, until Hashem became such a reality that he was really living him in a very tangible kind of way. When the wind blew, Avraham Avinu felt Hashem blowing wind on his face. And when he ate, he felt Hashem feeding him. And it went further and further. The next question would be, and again, we're fast forwarding in something that's beyond us. But okay, so what does he want from me? He reached that stage. If you're noticing, again, I'm talking to the Chovas HaLevavos people, that we went through the stages of discovering Hashem, Tishah B'china, which is sensing Hashem all around you, and then from there to that sense of just that indebtedness and feeling like, so what does he want from me? What am I supposed to be doing to reciprocate? Being overwhelmed and driven by that sense of indebtedness. What should I do? But you know what? Avraham Avinu didn't have a Torah. He had to continue thinking and thinking and thinking. How can he determine? How should a person who never got any instructions determine what Hashem wants from him? So how did he do that? So here we bring in, let's bring in another angle. What was Avraham Avinu known for? Chesed. This was, So we're going to see now, we're touching on the two great careers that Avraham Avinu came to through his processes. When Avraham Avinu is studying the Bria and he said, okay, what is Hashem, how can I figure out what Hashem wants from me? Well, what can I deduce is a value of his? And this is Avraham Avinu, through all of his studying of the world, saw that the predominant phenomenon, basically controlling all the world, is Chesed. Because apparently, this is Hashem's foremost occupation, so to speak. If that's his and value, and if that's his foremost value, that's going to be my foremost value also. And therefore, Avraham Avinu dedicated his life to Chesed. And he dedicated his life to another thing. And this is what you just mentioned before. He said, Hashem, on the one hand, he is, most of the world doesn't know about it. But on the other hand, he's giving these indicators all around, right? It's like the pasuk says, right? Each day expresses what it has to say. Each night is conveying knowledge. But as the pasuk continue, ein oimer vein dvarim, but no words are spoken. It's all there, but you have to hear it. That's not automatic. Many people are living with the all there. And that's why it says another pasuk that Avigdor Miller would stress all the time. Oite ol kasalma, neshamayim kayiriyah. Let's appreciate the significance of this pasuk. He kiviyachol Hashem kiviyachol clothes himself in light, like a dress, like a garment, and he spreads the heavens out in front of him like a curtain. There's a very big difference between a garment and a curtain. Both are covering the person. What does a curtain do? A curtain simply conceals. There's a curtain there, you don't necessarily see the person at all. The garment is there to do the opposite. It's there to punctuate the person's presence, right? If you wear a garment gives an indication as to your status, as to where you consider yourself, as to who you are, right? Uniform. I can get an idea of who you are in a broad way by looking at the way you're dressed. So the phenomena of the world serve both purposes at the same time, depending on how attuned you are. It's either a curtain, right, concealing Hashem from sight, the whole system of nature. It can also be a garment, showing you, hitting you in the face with, look at the Creator. And So Avraham Avinu was seeing all this, and he's seeing how on the one hand Hashem is concealed, while on the other hand, he's giving you all these indications. He wants you to figure it out. Most of the world wasn't really figuring it out, like we said before. As soon as they discovered the phenomenon of taste buds, they got to work. Taste buds are enough to keep you busy your whole life. All kinds of good things to match to your taste buds. That's all I need to know about the human body. Taste buds work. There's all kinds of good foods out there to put to your taste buds, and it begins and ends with that. That's all they needed to know.
Come to the idea that there's one God. I mean, up until then, everybody did believe in gods, just that there was a God for this and a God for that and a God for that.
Right.
So how did he come to the idea that there's one God behind everything?
How did he come to the idea that there's one God behind everything? Now, here again, any answer that we're going to give here now is a little presumptuous, right? But this is what we're doing, right? So, Avraham Avinu, again, here's the way we have to learn it up. He was seeing how all the forces of nature, lemaisa, are all cooperative and interactive. Everything is working together. The way the Psadia Goyim said it is, the world is, with all of its forces of nature, is a massive food production factor, right? And how whichever one you can identify as the force is really just being counterbalanced by another force, right? The sun and the moon and the system of night and day are all working in tandem to ensure that the earth gets precisely the right measures of exposure that it needs. The sun can't do that on its own. The sun needs the cooperation of the orbit to make sure that there are times when it's not burning earth to a crisp, okay? Or just over baking earth, and the seasons come in to temper it exactly. And you have the winds operating with the seas. The sun is hitting the seas and bringing up the vapors, and then the winds are causing them to condense into turning to clouds and pushing them over to the places where they're needed. And then the water comes to Earth with which all of its properties, which are not from the sun, right, is then utilizing that water that the sun helped bring over to it and starts producing these. And then the sun helps bake it and grow it. So Avraham Avinu saw these are all members working as one part of one cooperative system. And that system has so much wisdom to it. There must be one force on top of it all. Whenever there's going to be two forces, there's going to be some element of competition. And Avraham Avinu was seeing further. And if Hashem is giving all these indications, he wants it to be brought out. And therefore, Avraham Avinu said, here's another thing I can do for him, kviyachol, to serve him. I shouldn't say for him, to serve him. Besides emulating his value of chesed, I'm going to be an agent. I'm going to join the forces of nature by being an agent of bringing him out. I'm